locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
This is Thane Peterson, host of Living Jazz. Saturday at noon, I bring you 2 hours of the very best of the current jazz scene, along with a little bit of classic jazz thrown into the mix. It's wonderful music that will warm your heart and soothe your soul. Join me for Living Jazz, noon to 2 Saturday, only on Radio Catskill.
On this week's On the Media, how the map of the U.S. we grew up with has never shown us our true selves.
If you looked up at the end of 1945 and you saw a U.S. flag flying overhead, it was more likely that you were living in a colony or occupied zone than on the U.S. mainland.
Empire, on this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is retired teacher, animal advocate, klezmer musician, Yiddish teacher, whale and elephant supporter, and president of the Catskill Exotic Bird Club, Richie Cheeger. Richie is a man on the move, but I'm going to try to break it all down for you with Richie's help, of course. Here we go. Richie, welcome to Catskill Character. I'm so happy to have you with me today.
I'm very happy to be here, Donna.
I know you were born in Manhattan, and you grew up for the first 10 years of your life in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Then you moved to East Flatbush. How would you describe your childhood?
It was not the easiest because I was different. I had different ideas, different loves than the average kid was supposed to have. I was always involved with animals and elephants. It was the only thing that really interested me all my life. And I used to like to sing. That was about it.
You know, after our initial talk, I was thinking about that, how very different it was for you to have such an intense love and interest in elephants. Horses, dogs, I can understand. They're at least on the same continent that we live. But elephants, you know, not so much. It's not like you saw them every day. Where did this come from, Richie?
That's a very hard question to answer because I don't know. It's as long as I remember. Elephants were the main interest of my life, my raison d'être, you could call it. They're brilliant, wonderful, incredible animals that are being destroyed right now in the world. But they are amazing, and I've loved them for as long as I can remember.
I want to give the listener the wrong idea that you loved elephants to the exclusion of all other animals. On the contrary, I'm betting you were that kid who brought home animals and wanted to keep them. Is that true?
That is a very, 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 very true statement. I brought home everything that I saw on the street that I could get near, you know, every dog, every cat, rabbit, anything that needed a home or was on, like I said, I found on the street, I'd bring home. And my mother would say, get it out of here.
Aw, so you didn't have any animals in the house?
Well, I did. We had a parakeet, and then when I was 12, out of a lot of manipulation, I finally got a dog that I loved more than life. His name was Lucky, yeah.
And he was lucky to have you. You also had great empathy as a teacher, which you were for 34 years. Something that you said when we first spoke struck me. You said, referring to children in school, and I'm quoting you now, "The child is not there to meet the needs of the school." Was that your experience as a child going to school in New York City?
Yes. Yeah. boy, if you broke a rule, you know, the rules were more important than the kids. And I could have, you know, there was no such thing then, but I could have had ADHD because, I mean, I was a smart kid, but I couldn't do what they wanted me to do. Instead, I read a million books on elephants, encyclopedias, anything I could grab. But it was difficult being different.
Yeah, it always is for kids. And it was probably hard for you to focus on what they were talking about because you're thinking about what you just read the night before, or you're thinking about the elephants. You probably had a hard time just focusing, right?
I had a very hard time focusing on what they wanted me to focus on. But that made me a better teacher.
Yes.
It really did, yeah.
So you already had the built-in empathy for kids. You didn't have to think what they were feeling. You already knew from your own experience.
Yeah. I tried very hard to work within the interests of the children. I mean, I once had a kid who was so brilliant, it was ridiculous. And the teachers couldn't deal with him because he didn't do what they wanted him to do. But I found out when he came to me, I found out that he had a passion. And so he was so smart. He knew everything. I let him work within that passion. And I utilized the facilities in the school for him to you know, to work within his passion. And I mean, I think every kid needs that. Really, most kids can do what you want of them as long as you're not being abusive. I've seen abusive teachers, but most kids will fit in. Some don't. And when they don't, you can't put a square peg into a round hole. And,
right.
You know, you got to understand that.
You know, I was wondering why you decided to become a teacher and not like a vet or someone who works with animals.
Well, my original idea was to become a vet. I graduated high school very young at 16. I went to an agricultural school. I couldn't stand it. So I went back to school in the city and I ended up with a degree in speech and theater because I was always performing. I was performing, you know, just singing since I was 6 years old in hotels here in the Catskills. There was I sang at the Paramount when I was six. I sang at the Rosemond when I was seven. I sang at the Alamac when I was eight. And then that went on and on. But I forgot your question. I'm sorry. You're going to have to edit it.
No, I was asking you why you became a teacher and not a vet or someone who worked.
So I did. I sang. I performed. I loved that. And I graduated with a degree in speech and theater because I couldn't stand the cruelty that I saw to the animals. I couldn't stand it. I had to get out of that. And my mother told me to take education. I'll have something to fall back on if the acting doesn't work out, you know, being an entertainer. Yeah. And I did. I took 12 ed credits. And when I graduated, I got a job immediately, got my own apartment in Brooklyn and found myself in a world I was crazy about. I adored the kids. I absolutely adored the kids. And I felt like, wow. And I just stopped going for auditions. And I definitely wasn't going to be a vet because I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand what I had to see.
So when you were in agricultural school, I guess they had a lot of animals there. And you saw them acting cruelly to the animals. And that turned you off. It's fantastic that you listened to your mother.
it was easier to listen to her than not to listen to her. And I took these courses. They were very easy. You know, it was like nothing. And the thing was, I wanted a job and I got an apartment, like I said, and I loved the kids. It was like, it was terrific. I absolutely loved the kids.
So were you teaching drama and speech throughout your career, or did you teach other topics as well?
When I taught at IS 88, which it's like a middle school, grade 6, 7, 8, and 9. I taught 8th grade and 9th grade English and science. But instead of English, I got permission from the principal to teach drama as an elective. And I taught theater, you know, I taught drama there and I loved it. And I also taught biology in, you know, 9th grade biology. But, you know, so, and then, you know, that was that part. Then I moved upstate here and I got the job in Fallsburg, and it was a 6th grade job for kids that kind of needed help. They used to homogeneously group the kids, so they gave me the what they called, an awful name, the bottom group.
You know what I wanted to say was, you incorporated your love of animals into the classroom, and you told me about your whale watching program, which I thought was fantastic. I'd love for you to tell the listener about that. We don't have a lot of time left. I want you to talk about that and the elephants.
Okay. The Whale Watch program happened because I wrote curriculum on endangered species with a great emphasis on the great whales and elephants, of course. And I put learning about whales and biology of whales and everything else into every subject area. Then I found out there was a program that I could take my kids. I can raise money, take my kids to Cape Cod and, you know, places where there was whale watch. And they knew everything about the whales. I raised money with the parents. I'd meet with the parents every month. We raised enough money to hire a bus and to pay completely for those kids who couldn't pay. There was no child left out. I wouldn't do that. And we went overnight, Cape Cod, you know, to Provincetown. They saw things there. We went also to Boston and Plymouth. We went to whale watches out of there, and we saw all the sights to see there. But the best part was going out on the ocean and seeing an actual whale watching. For those kids who were lucky and went on good years, it was spectacular. We had whales breaching by the boat, which is leaping completely out of the water. I have kids coming to me now that I hadn't seen in 20, 30 years who tell me it was the highlight of their education.
I bet. That's the kind of class I would have loved to have taken in high school. We only have like a minute left. So I want you to bombard the listener with all of the facts that we talked about elephants.
Okay. Elephants are one of the most intelligent, sensitive, sentient beings in the world, and they are being tortured, absolutely tortured, to do what they're quote supposed to do in India. And then in Africa, between 1978 and today, there have been a million whales, not whales, you hear me? There have been a million elephants killed for their ivory tusks or for trophy hunting. President Obama eliminated the importation of ivory in 2014, but unfortunately Trump came in and he opened it up to trophy hunting, which is terrible because, you know, poached ivory comes in with what they call trophies, which is disgusting anyway. And elephants need help. Elephants need help. People need to be aware of what they're going through. You can see this movie called Gods in Shackles. Look it up on your computer. It'll open your eyes to a horrible situation, but you need to see it. People need to know what's going on with elephants in order to make it stop. The circuses hardly have any elephants anymore, just a few, and hopefully they'll be gone. There are sanctuaries for elephants here in the United States that all the captive elephants should be in. It gives them a lot of room to roam and to live somewhat like elephants should.
And you've been to India and Thailand investigating the treatment of the elephants. And I guess you're feeling that there is a little bit more awareness.
Definitely. My wife and I worked at the Bun Lhoat's Elephant Sanctuary in Sukhothai, Thailand for almost 2 weeks. We helped take care of the elephants. These were previously abused elephants. this one that was crippled on one of her front legs. Her name was Peng Dao. The first morning I was there, came out of the jungle with her friends and saw me. And she walked over to me. It was across like a field. And she took her trunk and she put it on my heart. And I melted. I never felt like that before. Mm. It was wonderful. And I had been very good friends here in New York with an elephant named Fritha, who lived in an animal sanctuary in Westtown. Unfortunately, she died. I used to take my classes to meet her and the other animals there. But there are sanctuaries. There are sanctuaries in Thailand that are very good. The Elephant Nature Park is very good, several of them. And never watch an elephant performing, painting. Never ride an elephant. You have no idea how terribly they were trained. They mm-hmm. were tortured. You can look up the Phajan, Phajaan, the Phajan process, and you'll know what they do to baby elephants to make them give up their spirit, like literally break their spirit.
Well, thank you so much for that information, Richie. I think this is a good place for us to take a quick break. And we're going to come right back with more from my guest, Richie Cheeger, here on Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. We'll be right back.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it, and thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at wjffradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table, and this week we are talking iconic dishes of the Great Midwest with Chef Paul Fehrbach and burger scholar, yes, burger scholar, George Motes. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fehlenberg, and I've been speaking today with Richie Cheeger. Richie was a teacher for 34 years. He's an animal advocate, and in the first half of the show, he told us about his love for and work with elephants and the Cape Cod whale watching program he developed for his students and some of his thoughts on education. In the second half of the show, Richie's going to tell us about two other loves he has, klezmer music and teaching Yiddish. Let's go. Richie, what kind of music did you typically hear in your house growing up?
It's a funny question because it's klezmer. My parents had lots and lots of Yiddish music albums that they listened to, and we heard cantorial music, which I also did. I knew a lot of Yiddish, you know, mostly Yiddish music. I'd say that was what my parents had.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that you also told me your grandmother, who only spoke Yiddish, that you and your grandmother used to sing Yiddish songs, and I guess that was a way for you to learn Yiddish as well, right?
It was my mother who sang the Yiddish songs.
Oh, your mother.
My mother had a great voice. She could have been in Yiddish theater. They would always ask her to sing. Let's say we'd have an affair and she'd get so nervous she couldn't do it. I, on the other hand, have no stage fright at all.
Yes, none. I don't doubt that. So didn't you start singing in the hotels in the Catskills when you were very little?
I was six. For the summer, we went to Mountaindale to a place called the Lilac House. And there were hotels there, you know, between Mountaindale and Woodbridge. And when I was six, I used to sing at the Paramount Hotel. And they pay me $2, I remember. And when I was 7, it was the Rosemond. And then 8, it was the Alamac Hotel. I guess they're all gone now. Yeah. And they used to send a car for me every week, and I would do a whole show at these hotels and sing all kinds of songs, all kinds, you know, Yiddish, English, Broadway show music. And, you know, it was a lot of fun.
You know, I don't know if you know this, Richie, but we have a show on Sundays. It's a lot of Yiddish music, klezmer. Of course, I'm forgetting the name of the show now, but I'm going to send it to you. It's on Sundays, and we have a great guy who does the show. You probably love it.
I heard about it from several people, and I kept meaning to find out who it is, give him one of our CDs, or go to meet him, whatever, and I never got around to it. But
yeah, I'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah, I would like it.
So in 1995, the clarinetist Robin Seletsky formed a group called the Catskill Klezmorum. How is it that you started to sing with that group?
Jackie and I went to see a show that they did near Binghamton, New York. And I really didn't know people were ever singing those songs. They were like old, what Jackie used to call old Jewish wedding music. And we go in, the music starts to play, and I almost fell off my seat because it brought back so many memories and so much feeling. And I knew every song. It was a woman singer, and I knew every song she sang. Mm. And after the show was over, Jackie and I went backstage, and we met the band leader, Robin Seletsky, and I told her about myself, and Jackie is substantiating everything I'm saying. Yes, you'll like him. He's good. You know. And so Robin gave me an audition. I came back the next day, 2 days later, and she hired me on the spot. And I sang with them for several years. I'm on one of their CDs. It's called Beyond the Borscht Belt. I do 2 songs on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I sang with her father's band, Harold Seletsky. He was amazing. I mean, Robin was a great clarinetist, but her father was spectacular. And he made a clarinet daven. He really, really did. And for those who don't know what daven is, it's the old Yiddish way of praying. And I loved it. I used to do a lot of club dates, and I hadn't been doing them, but I would incorporate 1 or 2 Yiddish songs, but I would do a lot of club dates in the various hotels up here. I sang Chazunisha music in Chicago and other places, lots of the hotels here in Lakewood, in Atlantic City, I used to sing. But that's how I kind of got my whole start. That's how I, you know, with Robin Seletsky, I got my whole start doing klezmer music as a specific thing. Mm. And yeah.
Fantastic. By the way, I remembered the name of that show. It's called Borscht Beat, I think.
Borscht Beat. I'll have to write that down. I don't
know. Borscht Beat. And it's on Sundays at 1 o'clock. You should check it out.
I will check that out. I definitely will. And, you know, I don't know if you're going to ask about it, but after that, I worked with my friend Leon Helfstein, who is a pianist, and another friend of mine, Laura Schneider. But we made Chai on Music, which is Laurie calls it a whirlwind tour of Jewish music. It's klezmer and other Jewish music. I've been singing with them for years now. We have a clarinet player. We have a violin player. We have a bass player. We've been a lot of that Chai on Music.
I was wondering if you're still teaching that conversational Yiddish course at the Monticello Library.
Yes, absolutely. I love it. I really, really love it. It's fun. It's really nice people. We have a lot of people coming in the summer and a few in the winter. They're the ones that live here all year round. And we try to talk Yiddish. I mean, I know more than most of them. Some of them are great, you know, as far as the language goes. Most of them are very, very beginning in Yiddish. So I became the teacher. And it's an awful lot of fun. It really
is. It's on Wednesday mornings, right? Wednesday?
Yes. Wednesday morning, 10:30, the Monticello Library. Anybody is invited. If you have an interest in the Yiddish language, anyone is invited. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous. So we have to talk about the fact that you had a cow as a pet, and you know a lot about them, and you know about some of the treatment that they endure.
When we moved up from Brooklyn, this was way back in, I think, 1974, 1975, I don't remember exactly. One of the reasons I moved up here was to have all the animals I can have, and I wanted a cow. I loved cows all my life, and I bought a calf from a farm, and we raised her totally as a pet. She was a delight. She would come when I called her like a dog. I had told you the story of when we boarded her at a farm. She was fields and fields away when we came back. The farmer said he was going to go get her. And I said, you don't have to. I'll call her. And he said, it's a cow, not a dog. I said, I know. Watch. And I called her. Her name was Adelaide. And she came running to me, mooing, and put her head on my shoulder because she was my baby. But cows are treated horrendously. They have a baby every year. They want that baby. And you can share the milk. We did it. Addie had calves. We never took them away from her. And they don't share. It's business. Business is more important than life. And the cruelty of taking the calf from the cow is horrible. So you get all the milk. And they dehorn cows, which is putting an acid on the base, on the nub of where the horn would be growing on a calf's head. And it hurts like hell to do that. And because, you know, the horn, which is part of the body, gets in the way. I worked on a farm where the farmer never dehorned the cows and everything was fine. And there's places where they cut the tails off cows because they're in the way. And then every dairy cow ends up going to the market and going through the whole slaughter process, which I don't have to tell you about. It's horribly cruel. It's, you know, they don't take care that the animal shouldn't feel pain. It's what it is. It's cows, dairy cows are treated horribly. But not the Addie.
Thank God. I'm really sorry, but we've run out of time because I could talk to you for an hour at least about some of the things that you've done. I just want to mention one last thing for the listener, that you've also been the president for 39 years of the Catskill Exotic Bird Club. Is there a website that people can go to?
It's www.birdclub.com.
Oh, Richie, thank you so much for joining me today and for all that you've done for children and continue to do for our animal friends. I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
I loved speaking with you, Donna. Thank you so much for choosing me. Really.
Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Be sure to join us then for more conversations with fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On this week's Wait, Wait, legendary Pittsburgh Steelers coach Bill Cowher explains why he regrets going to his 20th high school reunion in Pittsburgh.
My wife was getting madder and madder as the night's going on, and then the guys were getting drunker and drunker and telling me all the things I did wrong in the San Diego Chargers.
I'm Peter Sagal. If you want people to lecture you on how you play our game, you should listen to this week's Wait, Wait from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is Rachel Kushner. She's the author of books like The Mars Room and The Flamethrowers. She'll talk about her new novel. It's a take on noir called Creation Lake. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.